This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 424, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
It was the time of the preacher, when the story began, of the choice of a lady, and the love of a man. I loved her so dearly.
Good evening. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 424. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me this fine morning are Josh Flanagan and Paul Montgomery.
Good evening.
Bet you're wondering why we gathered you all here today.
We are a fanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. We call that the pick of the week. And we talk about that on the show, along with other books of the week, other topics of interest, all kinds of fun stuff, all kinds of goofy nonsense. Sometimes it's early in the morning when we record and our voices are low.
I like morning haze, Connor. It's fun.
Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning, it's a spoiler-filled show. So if you haven't read the books, come back. Pause the show. Come back. Well, take a walk. I'd say walk around the block a few times. Come back. And you'll enjoy everything much more if you do. In the meantime, Paul, you had the pick.
I did. And I figured it was, you know, probably a good time to celebrate Daredevil, given that this is the last issue ever. this is the last issue of this run, this volume of Daredevil. It's issue number 36.
So weird they just end it like
they
that.
Just
oh,
ended,
well.
Yeah. And, but it's a great, man, there's a lot of pathos in here. There's a lot of, it's a great call to adventure. But this, it's an end of a chapter, and it's not just the end of the Mark Waid, Chris Samnee chapter. It's the end of the chapter of Matt Murdock's life where he's in New York. He's not going to be in Hell's Kitchen anymore.
For a while.
For a while, at least. But he's making a big move over to San Francisco. I think a lot of Marvel characters are making the move to sunny California, noticing that, you know, New York's kind of covered, you know, like we got some people,
it's also
we got some
a lot
bodies
of snow
here.
Yeah. And ice and snow and ice and snow and
also
ice.
I heard a weird thing yesterday. California wants to branch off into like five different.
Six.
Six?
It's not it's not California.
California doesn't want to.
It's a
some
lunatic
dude.
In
right.
Silicon Valley that wants to do that. Let's not go crazy here.
I was like, that's weird.
I don't want my money to. Anyway.
Exactly.
I just decided that I would not say that.
Well, this is also an exciting issue because I don't think I've ever read a comic book before where a superhero has revealed their secret identity.
There have been many. Civil War. Right?
Civil War. What's better? Yeah, there's been several, but I thought this was handled particularly well.
Well, it's a particularly direct way. I mean, he does it on the stand in the middle of this court case. And then he, you know, jumps into action.
Yeah,
as Daredevil in the middle of the courtroom.
That was pretty cool to see Matt Murdock like doing the Superman thing, opening up his shirt, and there's the Daredevil symbol on his chest. You see that. You usually see him running down into an alleyway or up on a rooftop in the shadows or something. But to do it so publicly,
that was a particularly wonderful sequence that I enjoyed.
Yes,
in this issue where he opens the shirt, and the bailiff's coming at him with a gun, and he sort of smacks it away with his billy club.
not, I want to say haphazardly, but sort of, you know, he's got other things to worry about. So it's a great two panel sequence. I thought this was a great issue.
I mean, it's one of those books that we talk about where it's consistently great, you know, month in, month out. But this one, just, it felt very special. I thought Chris Somni was on the top of his game. I really liked that page where it spells out, I am Daredevil, yes, in panels. And you get to see all of the other superheroes, mostly in New York, reacting to that. Like, they're you know, they've been watching the case on television. And I guess somebody, like, must have tweeted out, hey, Matt's saying some weird shit. You know,
everyone seemed to be watching it.
Everybody turned it on. And
had the internal WhatsApp superhero group going. And was like,
they have a Facebook group.
Yeah.
Same thing.
They're on Google
Plus. I think this is one of the most fully formed comic series out there.
Mm-hmm.
In that these two guys, not just two guys, the whole team, the colors are great, the lettering is great.
Is it Javier Rodriguez on the colors?
Javier Rodriguez on colors. And I will scroll to the front eventually and tell you the letter. It's Kojo Karamagna, and they're just a fully formed comic. They have, you know, there's no doubt here. They know what they're doing. You have a full, you know, fully realized universe. You've got great characters that they fully understand. It has a distinct look about it. I mean, this is a Daredevil comic, and you know what it is when you look at it.
Just some truly special layouts in this issue. And I mean, there always are, but like this issue, each page is laid out entirely differently from the last one. So there's a great sense of rhythm. You know, like when they talk about looking at a script page, you know, there should be the ratio of black to white print to just, you know, white space on a script page should always look a little bit different from page to page, have a bit of variety. And with this, it would be very similar. You have these really big panels where Matt's really big in the frames, especially that sequence you were talking about earlier where he's running through the courtroom. Just big dynamic shots, and then also the crazy I Am Daredevil page, the wonderful page that sort of like tells his origin story through the Daredevil Yellow era,
right.
Which plays with circles and stuff. It's really nicely laid out and very impressive to look at. And yeah, I do love the colors as well. There's warm yellows in the courtroom. And I got to talk about that sequence where he tells Foggy what he's going to do. Last issue was when the big cliffhanger is revealing I Am Daredevil. Then we rewind a little bit in the beginning of this issue to say, well, what's Foggy going to think about this? And Foggy's been going through his cancer treatment. He's bald at this point, and he's saying, you know, what does my life mean if I'm going to get in the way? If my considerations get in the way of Matt Murdock's integrity, you should be able to tell the truth, even if this is going to hurt us, because in the end, they're disbarred in New York. And
right. There's
a nice loophole that Matt has worked as a lawyer in San Francisco previously. So he can, you know, open up shop there, and he's going to take Foggy with him and Kirsten McDuffie, the love interest. And they have, you know, that wonderful moment at the end, which is it's a very swashbucklery, you know, Daredevil moment where they embrace and they're kind of dangling off the roof to go swinging around the skyline.
Well, it calls back to the very first issue.
Yes.
That kiss in the first one. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and I Am Daredevil.
Yeah, it does. Taken as a volume, it feels like it should be more than 36 issues, but taken as a volume, this has been one of the better complete comic stories out there. I mean, it's not over. I mean, this issue does put a cap on the Sons of Serpent storyline that's been running for a while. So you get the resolution to that. And I'm sure that with the move to the West Coast and the all-new Daredevil book, there will be a new storyline. But, this is a great, great run of a book. It's not over, but this particular volume is, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's got that nice ratio of Matt's life to Daredevil's adventures, which I think Matt can sometimes get, at least as his love life, that can sort of get, you know, embroiled in the whole Daredevil thing, where there's an interesting divide between the two. You get a little bit of both of those tones.
Yeah, right. In previous books, and I don't think this is actually, now that you bring it up, I don't think it really happens in this as much, but it was always that, oh, everything sucks so much as Matt. I'll go be Daredevil for a little while.
Right.
And that was the other side of that coin. And this feels more like the two are connected, I suppose. Like they're the same person. Whereas before, literally, I now I'm thinking about it, like Daredevil was really sort of an escape kind of thing. It was a blow off valve for whatever havoc had been wreaked in Matt's life. And that's less so here, I think, which is kind of cool.
There's also the havoc is lessened. There's not a constant cycle of death and drug abuse and murder and all kinds of things going on. What's happening to Foggy is terrible, but it's also he's having things are going relatively well the rest of his life, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean it's heavy stuff at times, but like what does he say when he's leaving the house? He's like, you know, like don't die or something, and he's saying it sort of jokingly, and it's like I will stick around. Wade has a really great way of depicting adult friendships where it can be very sweet, but it's not saccharine. It's very realistic. It very much feels like, without being bros too, you know, like it's a nice fine line that he walks. And I really appreciate that. It's a very mature way of looking at a friendship, and you know, he's not you know going in the corner and crying and everything. He's trying to face it with a little bit of humor. Yeah, it's like Hawkeye and Trapper or something in MASH. You know,
I just want to know if Brent Schoonover is going to get his comeuppance in court.
I do enjoy the cameos.
Think he is. Yeah,
it's fun. This is a great book, and that you know it couldn't be picked enough.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It couldn't be picked enough. I'm glad the team's continuing. So that's the most important thing. And this looks like it's Daredevil's 50th anniversary, which is nice.
We're old.
For everyone who doesn't want to feel old. Amazing X-Men number 4. I keep forgetting this book. I feel like this book takes... Is it a monthly book? Are we falling into that trap?
Probably. That's what's happening again, yeah.
Anyway, it's great. I really love this book. I love the tone of it. I love that it's a little, I don't want to say sappy, but it is a little sappy, which is fine because it works for the story. I love Nightcrawler. I think he's a great catalyst in the team. And that he's got these really personal relationships with all the different members in different ways.
I think I forgot to read this. I think I just like got no. I think I like I lost it in all of the other X-Men books that I read or don't read.
Yeah, because it's sort of disconnected from it's not part of the Trial of Jean Grey stuff. It's not the all new X-Men, but this is I'm gonna use the word again. It's swashbuckling. I mean it's Nightcrawler in a
like literally pirate hat.
It's literally swashbuckling, and it's also I feel a great feel good book.
Mm-hmm.
It just if you have any kind of nostalgia for the X-Men, and there's a lot of it here because you get the Nightcrawler thing, the relationship between Nightcrawler and Wolverine. You also get, you know, the whole thing with Iceman and
Firestar.
Yeah. And that's, it looks like they're going to be doing is Aaron's doing a Spider-Man and his amazing friends sort of book, which I believe they announced that.
You would know better than we would.
No, I mean, and it's not a thing that I know and I'm not supposed to say.
Unless it's in the book on Wednesday, I don't know anymore. So
yeah, I think I just
which is awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, no, that's
but to me, I love the flashback to the old classic time when Beast was first blue and he was an Avenger, and like there's a very brief scene of Beast and Nightcrawler playing crazy obstacle chess in the danger room, and it's a great nostalgia here without it being a nostalgia book.
Yeah,
simply because Nightcrawler is a character that has existed through all that time, has all these unique relationships, but also has been gone for so long. So he's returning, and there's that feeling of nostalgia because everyone looks at him and sees something different. And I love the origin of the Bamfs.
Oh yeah,
the Bamfs are sort of the Groots of this book.
They're these cuddly little things that Nightcrawler describes as his little brothers, but they're part shapeshifter, and you see their original form, and they're like these like larvae from the River Styx, basically. And that's one of the things I love about Jason Aaron, that he can strike that tone where this is a book about hugs, but then it's also this is about the X-Men going to hell to rescue their friend. And
put that in the cover. This is a book about hugs, Paul Montgomery.
That's a Jason Aaron line, is that he said, I'm grateful that there's been a great response to this issue in particular, because it's all about hugs. And
It's also all about the book ending with all the X-Men dressed like pirates on a pirate ship going to battle other pirates, other demon pirates. So.
Yeah, they're all in like a team formation, and Beast is wearing, you know, a bandana on his head, and Storm's got her bandana on with, and it's Storm with the mohawk too. So it definitely harkens back to a certain, you know, era in the X-Men, and it's definitely a call to adventure where Nightcrawler's like looking directly at us and say, "Let's go be amazing."
Yeah.
And that's fun every once in a while. I'd like more of that.
It looks fantastic. It
really does.
I want Ed McGuinness to draw this book as long as he's able to.
This is some good McGuinness.
Probably the first arc, but it's still great. I really like this book.
Mm-hmm. In 6 months, you'll be like, why was I reading this again?
No, because Jason Aaron will be writing it, I assume.
Yeah, I know. That's true.
Now, what the fuck is the unwritten apocalypse?
That's a good question. I saw that this week and I thought, oh, yeah. Oh yeah, the Unwritten.
Did they reboot it?
Yeah, yeah.
This is number two.
I mean, you're going to see a theme with me right now. I'm a distracted human, and I lost track of the Unwritten. I guess during the Fables crossover. So whatever I don't know if they were trying to get more people to read it who'd read Fables or what. But for some reason, I hadn't read the end of that. Maybe I just looked at it. I thought it was a Fables book. So I didn't get it. Also didn't like it. That's true. But it was like a really big deal. It feels like it was a really big deal for both worlds. Like it was, if nothing else, it wasn't a crossover that didn't matter, but it was a crossover that put the one story very involved in the other story. And they both took blows from it. So then that ended and I went back and I reread the end of that and I was like, oh, okay. And then they took 3 months off. And they came out with this Unwritten Apocalypse, the first issue of which I had missed, but I caught up and I read them all. And this is the world of Tom Taylor. It's over. The world has ended. I mean, it's like a superhero book.
Hmm.
They come back to the world. It is it's all, you know, been destroyed, and they're being hunted, and they're still trying to figure out what powers he has and what he can do and what he can't. And it really feels like it's one of those things. Like, I've been reading this book for years now, and I don't know what the hell it is anymore.
It's strange for a Vertigo book to do that because,
well,
quite
yes.
Usually they are finite stories.
I know, and that's kind of what I was in for.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what I signed up for. So, I can't blame them for trying different stuff. It's probably not like they have huge sales or anything. One of the other things that's happening in it is that the literary references are not starting to, they have gone way beyond me. And, you know, I'm a relatively well-read guy, but I'm not, you know, British English literature well-read.
Right.
You're and not Oxford well-read. There's a lot going. Maybe Alan Moore could understand this if he read it. But I've definitely started to lose the thread and I don't, excuse me. It's a little homeworky, and I don't know. It's just I'm a little disappointed that I'm off the train. I'm a little disappointed that this thing that I really liked and was kind of like I liked that there was, you know, some stuff you understand and some stuff you don't, but it's okay because you still get it. And I've really lost a thread with it, same team. Say everything's the same, but you know, I
find the rebranding fascinating. Not the rebranding, but the rebooting.
So, yeah, it was a very.
When I first saw it listed on the shipping list, I thought it was a like miniseries or something, but
no,
it's weird.
That's what threw me off. Because again, like I don't even pay attention to anything. I just get the books, and if they're different, then I guess I don't notice them. But I don't know. It feels like a misstep because it's not like going to bring somebody in new at this point,
right?
Well, you know? First off, Gesundheit, because you sneezed earlier.
Thank you.
And I apologize. I didn't say it sooner. But I hope that this continues on, even though I'm not reading. Although it feels like something that I might like. It has.
Oh, I think you definitely might.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I started in the beginning and I just sort of lost track with it after like the first trade or something. But I hope that it continues forever because I love the covers all the time. Like the Yuko Shimizu covers are just spectacular.
Why don't you marry them?
I kind of want to marry them. Yeah.
I
hope they do a collection of them.
It makes me want to. I'm sure they will. It makes me want to go back and just read Lucifer again, so I can have Mike Carey and Peter Gross and Ryan Kelly actually doing a complete story that I can follow, and I know is fantastic. I think I just wanted that, and it turned into another thing, and that's totally their right, and it's fine, but I definitely lost a step with me. And it makes me feel stupid, too, because I don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I also, feel like I should be able to.
Also, even though it's like a new number one, well, this number two issue, but even though there was a new number one issue, if I were a new reader, I would be intimidated by that because I'd have knowledge that there was unwritten before, and adding Apocalypse to it doesn't make it sound...
No, it doesn't. I can't help but think, and this is utter speculation, but I can't help but think in a world of that Dan DiDio is control of, that there wasn't a, like, relaunch it. Well, we would relaunch it. Okay.
Yeah.
It just did it. I don't know. It seems like a really strange move for this kind of book, but at the same time, this kind of book is not all that successful lately. So what can you do?
Well, I'm going to keep banging the drum for Harley Quinn's Adventures in Brooklyn. This is issue 3 of Harley Quinn, Palmiotti Gray, and the artist's name is...
Chad Harden.
It really is...
7-7?
We met him at Comic-Con. It really is a book out of time. And what I mean by that is Harley Quinn looks kind of like the New 52 version, but she's really the old Harley Quinn. So it doesn't really fit in, and it feels very much in that old vein. The way she talks about Mr. J all the time, it doesn't really fit in the world that they've built.
Yeah, no.
So it does feel like you're reading an old DC book. But it's not like
leather and spikes.
She doesn't really wear that. She wears her old. Well, she wears different versions of her costume. There's a line in here about how, when she's getting dressed, about how she doesn't understand how Superman wears the same clothes every day. It's fun, and it's not superhero action so much. I mean, there is a following story about how there's a price in her head, so she keeps running into bounty hunters, kind of like Lando or Han Solo. But mostly, this is it's Valentine's Day. She's alone. Poison Ivy leaves her a plant. Turns out it's a love potion plant. She eats a strawberry on it, and everyone who sees her falls in love with her, including a bus full of murderers going to Rikers Island that crashes, and so they all get out. Instead of trying to escape, they all chase after her because they've smelled her.
Am I looking at a beaver on a skateboard?
Yes, she's hallucinating. She's got a stuffed beaver that she hallucinates is alive and talks to her.
Okay.
And there's lots of beaver jokes, as you might imagine.
I did.
It's just super fun, and it's silly, and it's a little sexy because that's what Palmiotti and Gray do, and... if you miss the DCU, especially those characters, you know, the Harley Quinn character, this is very, very much the old character in this new setting in Brooklyn. It's just really, really fun, sweet book because she's lonely. It's Valentine's Day. She misses her Mr. J. No one else loves her. She keeps trying to find a Valentine. No one's taking the bait.
So. I always like when I hear or see that the old DCU is sneaking in a little bit into the new 52, like... This is a band of freedom fighters trying to keep it alive.
It's very rare, and things I know.
I feel like all of the people who were around for the first wave of super dark comics, like they were with it for a little while, and it's so tiring. So like you start to get these little glimpses of like whatever post dark comics is. I don't remember what Grant Morrison called that, but there was an era, you know, like we after the. Whatever the post 86 class that sort of started up in the 2000s that DC's trying to ignore, I feel like you can only do that super dark serious superhero comic for so long, especially if you've been in the industry for a while, because it's exhausting,
unrelenting.
Yeah, it is unrelenting.
Like if you want
of the Batman,
if you want fun superhero comics, then I would definitely check out Harley Quinn, or as I call it, Harley Quinn's Adventures in Brooklyn.
So, speaking of fun, lighthearted superhero comics, and this is probably more lighthearted than Harley Quinn, there's no beavers on skateboards or bloodletting or anything like that. The Shadow Hero, number one, by Gene Luen Yang and Sonny Liu. Gene Luen Yang, you might know him as the writer and artist behind American Born Chinese.
Which is the book of the month.
Yeah, that's one of his bigger projects. And then last year he came out with a really cool project, which I'm excited to read, called Boxers and Saints, which is like a two-part graphic novel where one part it's about the Boxer Rebellion, and one part is on one side of the conflict, and the other other part is the other
side.
So the protagonist and antagonist forces swap between the two books, which I think is fascinating, and you can get it as like a box set. So I'm excited to check that out. But anyways, he's got this new project from First Second called The Shadow Hero, and it's going to be collected, I believe, in July in print, but they're coming out with, I think it's 6 digital issues, and you can read it on all different formats. I think it's like an iBooks and Kindle and Nook and all that stuff. And I read the first issue, which came out on Tuesday of this week. And it's about, it's a reimagining, a revival of the Green Turtle, who is a golden age superhero character that I'd never heard of. He's touted as the first Asian or first Chinese American superhero. And he was created for Blazing Comics back in 1944 by, I think he was a writer artist, Chu Hing. And this Green Turtle character, they said this publisher, I think called Rural Comics or Rural Home, I think it was called, said, we want you to do a superhero character. And he came up with this superhero, and he really wanted it to be a Chinese American like himself, but they were a little bit, gun shy about that. So his way of doing it was to depict the character where you'd never see his face. Even under a mask, and he has sort of a luchador kind of mask, but he'd always, his arm was outstretched, like punching in front of his face, or his back to the camera, and it's very clear that that's what the artist was trying to do. He was intentionally hiding the character's face so that in his mind it could be a Chinese character or a Chinese American character, but for other audiences and for the publisher, it could be anybody. So that's something that they had to deal with in 1944. Anyways, fast forward to now, The Shadow Hero is a retelling of that story, and Sonny Liu's art is wonderful.
Yes.
He did a Sense and Sensibility adaptation for Marvel not too long ago. He's done mostly some just freelance things here and there for Marvel. He's a Malaysian artist. Reminds me a lot of Rob Guillory. Just in the expressiveness of the characters, and not just because you have Asian characters, but like, I think the style is very similar, and it's something that would be very much at home in like a children's picture book. It's not mainstream superhero comics, but the layouts and the way that, Gene Luen Yang, writes it, it's really harkening back to the golden age, where he even has caption box explaining sort of what's happening on panel. But it's really charming, and the character doesn't even get to become the Green Turtle or the Shadow Hero. I'm not sure what he's going to call himself by the end of the issue. It just his mom discovers, or she is saved by a superhero, and I guess this takes place in the 1920s, 1930s,
something like that,
in that area. But they own a grocery store in the San Incendio, San Francisco area. It's in California, where Gene Luen Yang grew up. And the mother is saved by a superhero, and she thinks that this is the most exciting thing ever. She's so far been let down by her experiences in America.
Well, it's very much an American Tale opening.
Yeah.
Which I love. I love anytime I can think of Fievel. She's a kid. They're going to America because the unrest in China, and she has these dreams of what America is like, and everyone smells great, and the women are all beautiful, and
there's going to be this color, but then she gets there, and it's all drab. Everything's gray.
Yeah,
and
there are indeed cats, and the streets are not paved with cheese when she gets there. It was I liked it a lot. I mean, it was very much an opening chapter. It was very much an introduction to the characters. Right. But it was still really great character work. I liked the mom's character. She was interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good look at sort of such a different cultural take on things.
Yeah, we've even seen the immigrant experience, and I mean, that's huge for like the Superman, mythos and everything. But this is an angle that I don't think I've seen before, and I like, he has this warm relationship with his dad, and he just wants to be a grocer just like him when he grows up.
Over the store, play mahjong, drink whiskey with his friends in the back, and then have his son and hand the store off to his son. And
yeah,
his mom has grander plans for him.
Mm-hmm.
Which involves wearing a green costume and fighting crime, I assume. So it's going to be interesting.
You know, it's funny that we've never seen that. Like, if you think about the idea that, you know, humanity is littered with men and women who have been forced into doing things directly or indirectly by their mother.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, she wanted me to be a lawyer. She wanted me to be this or that. They wanted me to be in the family business. I've never seen a story with Watchmen had it, but
Sure.
It's not a lot of stories about that where like the parents are forcing you into doing the thing and sort of the requisite guilt that goes along with that. It's kind of interesting.
I just thought that, you know, writing in art wise, I just thought it was super charming, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And so you can either check this out in digital issues. It's something they're trying it for a second. And I guess it's each month leading up to July when it'll be out in print. So then you could read it as an OGN that way. So good recommended stuff.
And in July, Josh, where do they buy it?
They could go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, I suppose. I think it would be a good one. No, of course you'd want to do that. You would go there to buy any of the things that you would buy from Amazon. I buy all sorts of stuff from Amazon. Some stuff I don't even want to talk about that I buy from Amazon. I bought some pedals from there. But, you know, and I also bought some mailing supplies. I mean, it's quite all-encompassing. If you're like me...
Your life sounds so exciting.
The pedals would be exciting if, like, I could get outside.
Listen, I bought
the same
boring shit on Amazon like everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. I have some ink for the printer. It's going in there.
Wow.
That's got to be sent over. I just need black.
I need to sit out.
I still have a lot of cyan left. And it's off branding because that real shit's expensive.
I've been looking for some kind of thing, like the things you put over your eyes when you're trying to sleep, but you need the light out. Sleep mask. Yeah. That's a thing. I haven't known what to type in. I was like, that thing for your eyes. I was like,
my dog has been snoring so much that I've been using earplugs lately. You can get those on Amazon.
Jesus.
Yeah. Maybe it's not just the dog, but I've said too much. You could do that. You know what you should. You know what you should do. You know what you should go buy. You should go buy the Making of Star Wars books, all three of them.
I want those pretty bad.
Yes, they're so good.
I have the Indiana Jones one.
Yeah, you should get all those.
Those are those you can't find anymore. The Indiana Jones ones.
Yeah,
I looked.
Yeah, I have that in paperback.
I have a couple of those on my birthday list. Is what's happening. Anyway, so you could do that. And if you just make that link, your link to Amazon, then you don't have to do anything, and it helps us out a lot. Or suppose you have a large company and they make a giant order of something through Amazon, do it through there.
Yes.
I'm stunned. No one has to know. Or you can go to ifanboy.com/registration. You can support us more directly with cash donations. I'm putting it out there. It's blunt like that. Either $3 a month or $30 a year or whatever it is, a one-time offering of your choosing. This week I gave money to This American Life because I really like what they do and I wanted to support it.
And you wanted them to stop talking about it.
No, you know what? They only do it once a year now, or that's their goal if they can get enough. But they put it a certain way, you know, you give them some bucks, then they'll have enough. And if everybody did that, then everybody would be good and you can get great content for free. And that's kind of how this works too. So if this is important and you can help out even a little or regularly, that's awesome. Thanks very much.
I'd also say give half of what you might be giving us this month. Give that to the Bill Mantlo thing.
Yeah, that too. I gave them money too.
We're all very excited. Well, I'm very excited about the Guardians of the Galaxy thing. We'll see what you guys think later on in the show. But, you know. Give some support to the guy who made Rocket Raccoon a possibility. So
yeah.
So agreed. When DC first started doing the weekly digital books, I wasn't really very excited, and people were surprised I wasn't excited. But I knew that I would eventually fall behind, because when you're putting out six or seven books, you know, every week in chapters. See, I'm a trades guy at heart, so I'd rather have all of them together at once.
Exactly.
I'd rather have more material less often than less material more often. So I knew for sure I'd fall behind, which I did on all of them. But this week, Paul said we should really talk about Adventures of Superman number 43. And so I looked it up, and I had indeed fallen behind, and by a lot. And I noticed this issue written by Ron Mars, drawn by Evan Doc Shaner. And it was awesome. In fact, I was hanging out with Mike Romo, a writer and sometimes host of the show, and showed him. I said, hey, check out this art. And he did one of those Mike Romo head bobs. Whoa, mm-hmm. Whoa. Mm-hmm. It's
Mark great. Wade on Twitter said we should get Doc Shaner to draw every Superman story from now on, which I'm sure must have felt wonderful for Doc.
Bet.
So Mark Wade
should.
So Yeah. It's I mean, I've been a fan for a fan of Doc Shaner for a long time. He drew my Twitter avatar, which I've had for ages, of Captain Haddock. That's a commission.
He's regularly
I got from him.
Show up on our SketchUp feature on the website. Like he's a great up and coming.
Yeah,
artist.
I've always loved it. But like in terms of and he had you know some pretty good stuff last year. He did some Ghostbusters stuff. But 2014 is a big year for him with this, and then he's also going to be doing the Flash Gordon book with Jeff Parker. But so I've seen a lot of his stuff and I've been a fan, but this thing was just phenomenal. I thought it was great Superman art.
I think
and the coloring was wonderful too. He captures that great noble jawline of Clark Kent, and he has a huge love for all of the Superman extended cast as well. And he got to do that cover, you know, and you've got Bibbo on there, and you've got Jimmy and Lois and the whole extended cast, and Steve Lombard, one of my favorite characters in all of fiction.
Well, let's not shortchange Ron Mars either, who wrote this is just part one. I assume, you know, these are usually multi-part stories. This is part three-part story, and it's basically Superman and the Iron Giant. But it's still pretty cool.
Yeah, that's sort of the thing. It's like if this had debuted as one whole story, it might have been more of a stronger contender for pick of the week. But just because it was, you know, like a shorter thing, right. If you admit, let's wait until, you know, the print edition comes out, maybe, you know, give it a shot then. But I definitely wanted to talk about it because this is, you know, we've been saying, like, you know, we miss that classic Superman, but more and more they're putting out a lot of good Superman stories lately.
Well, did you notice in this? Wait, before we get to the next one, did you notice in this issue that he rescues Joe Kubert?
That was exactly what I was about to say. I did notice that he rescued Joe Kubert.
I forgot about that, but yeah, I was like, that's and definitely intentional. But
I also there's a shot of those two people, the two guys who were given up for adoption. There's a picture of two dudes in beards, and I want to know who they are. There's somebody.
Yeah,
I was like, is that Walt Simonson and someone else? Who is that?
But
that was definitely Joe Kubert. I was like,
no, for sure.
If you are missing, you know, the sort of classic DCU version of these characters, they're found in these books. I was going through after reading this and realizing I've been missing some good stuff. That I went through and sort of scanned, and there was a two part Superman story, guest starring the Joker, drawn by Jock, written by Max Landis, and that was really fun. They have some interesting, and we've been saying this for a while, they're putting really interesting people on these digital books, especially Adventures of Superman and Legends of the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of fanfare with them, but they're there.
Kind of hard to find on the DC app.
Yeah.
They don't, like, show up. Like, they don't show up in the list of, the way that I look for things is to look for what comes out in a given week.
Yeah.
They're not in that list.
Yeah, because they come out on Monday.
Yeah.
They come out every day of the week. There's a different, each book has its own release day.
Yeah.
Which is annoying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but like these Adventures of Superman stories, I think they come out on Mondays.
Right.
I think, or Tuesday, but yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. They're in their own section. There's an own section in the app, but
I think it's really just that we have this routine, and like every week we read comics a certain way. And so when something like this comes along, it's not like we're against it. It's just, it's out of the ordinary.
20 plus years of established,
right?
You know, not well. It's changed, but it's still very similar. This is the
people
day.
Used to ask why they wouldn't be on the comics page. It's because they were out every week, and people were trained to check the comics page on one day of the week. And then, you know, if a book comes out on Friday, it's not going to really. No one's going to notice it on the comics page. It just doesn't. It's good. I think it's always good to try new models, new distribution systems. It's just. You know,
it's our failing.
It doesn't fit into the established robotic way we do these things that we're programmed to do them. So,
and especially when there's so much coming out.
But I went through and I read. This inspired me to go back and read. I read a really, really fun three-part Riddler story. The most recent one that was I forgot who the writer on that one, but it was good. Then I read the Batman 66, and I read the Smallville. This Smallville's going the unwritten route. They've started over with a new miniseries because. I guess the sales were down so far. They felt they had to reboot. So, but it's still the same story, same characters. It's still hurtling towards Crisis on Infinite Earths. But it's that's good. But these are all good stories. They're just you just tend to forget about them because they come out so frequently and it becomes overwhelming. I look at my app and I see
maybe the kids don't. Maybe it's just all old people like us. But the kids
know. It's possible. I look at my app and I see I've got like, you know, 25 unread Superman Adventures of Superman, I just go, ugh, and I don't even bother to try because I see there's so many of them. So,
but they go fast.
Yeah.
So, no, they're fun. But I think we'd say
one
definitely
to two per bathroom break. And I didn't say that.
definitely check out this storyline, the Ron Mars and Evan Shaner one. Whether you do it digitally or they'll put it out in print eventually, but if you like Superman, definitely go for that because it's a love letter. Okay,
I was gonna get Undertow, and then I decided I didn't want to read it. So what was it?
Undertow is tricky. It's an Atlantean story. The art is gorgeous. It's a creative team that I had not been familiar with before. Let me grab it real quick.
Who's the publisher?
It is Image Comics. And it is written by Steve Orlando with art by Artyom Trakhanov, who I believe...
He's in charge of the illusions.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was trying to pick an Olympic event. Like that's, anyways, it's a beautiful book. The storytelling is a little difficult just because it's so... The art is kind of baroque. It reminds me a lot of like Prophet, but like instead of alien worlds, it's sort of underwater. And it's about this ruthless sort of Atlantean, ex-Atlantean warlord who takes on this silver spoon kind of Atlantean kid in his group to hunt down this amphibious creature so that they can untap its secrets so that they don't have to go walking around on land with bubble helmets with water in it. Like they have to, when they go on land, they have to wear, you know, diving suits, but the reverse version, you know, and there's, you know, sort of like Neanderthals on Earth. And it's very beautiful. I did have difficulties following the story panel to panel sometimes, but they do a neat thing where there's a battle sequence and they'll zero in on key moments because usually, you know, it's underwater. So it's a green or blue or purpley colors. But then they'll use red inside a white circle to sort of zoom in on key bits of action, and that helps guide your eye to where you want to be. But otherwise, I'm interested to see the second issue is a big deal. I need to see the second issue before I make any grand judgments about it. It's interesting. If you like interesting art, I would say check it out. There's a giant hermit crab looking thing at the end. That's cool. So verdict's out, but it's interesting.
Well, all right. I have been reading Alex and Ada from Joshua Luna, I think, not the other one, not Jonathan Luna, no brothers, just the one. Issue 4 came out this week, and I just hadn't had a chance to talk about it so far. It's basically like a not terribly far future robot story. It's a robot science fiction, which is, I really like robot science fiction. You know, there's the rules, and there was an event when the AI robots, you know, killed people or something like that, and now we're in the future, and this guy sort of, you know, he's in his 20s. He lives by himself and his grandmother buys him a robot. And everyone's like, they're for sex, right? And he's like, well, and then it freaks him out that it has no personality and it's weird. So he meets with like dark underground hackers and he's trying to figure out a way to unlock his AI basically so that he can see what kind of person Ada is. But she's a robot. And it's that sort of clean Luna style. And it's a fun little story. I finished the issues and I want to read the next one. I want to know where it's going to go. So I recommended it. Somebody recommended that I should read it, and I was like, I'm going to check it out. And it was really good. So the next thing I wanted to bring up really quick is, I know we talk about Captain America a lot, but it came, Dr. Mind Bubble.
Dr.
Mind Bubble.
Yeah. Captain America 17 this week. But the other thing, it's just occurring to me, it's like Rick Remender is he's a punk rock guy.
Yeah,
he's been through the punk rock scene, and all the titles of his of the books, his creator owned stuff, sort of have references to that kind of thing. And he is. It just occurred to me this week how much of a punk rock Captain America book he's doing, and it immediately like you think, man, I don't think Captain America is exactly the right book to do sort of that kind of punk rock, sort of anti-establishment kind of stuff.
Oh,
but it's totally the right place.
Totally the right place.
And I really feel like he's resurrecting sort of that Englehart 70s
yes.
Captain America thing that I've heard of. And I really love the conversation that's going on back and forth, is all of these anti-authoritarian terroristic figures are constantly...
He takes it to both sides. He takes it to the left
totally
and the
does.
Right. Yeah, both sides get a whacking in this book.
Yeah, and it's very intelligent, and it's very fair-handed. And it still reads like Captain America, and I'm really impressed by it. And it's, again, it's totally different than what Brubaker was doing. But it's a fun little thing to sort of see what he's doing with this. That's all.
Inside the mind bubble.
Yeah, mind bubble.
It's a very like classic Doctor Who looking villain, like
the 60s baby.
Yeah.
Justice League 28. Now I'm of two minds of this issue, Paul. One is I quite really enjoyed the story. I didn't expect to, but I have a weird affection for the Metal Men.
I do too.
And
I don't know if it's weird, but
well, I just didn't. I don't often think of it. I don't often. You don't see them a lot. I always forget that I like them, and then they show up, and I go, "Oh yeah, I like the Metal Men." But I thought it was a great sort of one shot introduction. I mean, it's continuing on, but I thought it was a great introduction to them. They were, you know, they weren't all that different from what you've known before.
Oh no, it's a very classic idea of the Metal Men. I mean, it's sort of the, you know, with Dr. Magnus, that's sort of what he's, I guess, modernizing in his relationship with them. Where he hates people and he's very distrustful of them. And, you know, the government very much want to be involved with his projects with, you know, the Metal Men, and they want to use the Metal Men. And this is Cyborg going to meet with Magnus and saying, we need help. This whole forever evil thing is continuing. That's sort of the shadow over this book.
But, that's my other thing. We'll get to that in a minute.
So that's all continuing. But I really liked this as a sort of one-shot kind of introduction to the characters. I like the idea that he's so hard and so that Dr. Magnus, I mean, he's so callous, cause he's been burnt, you can tell. And he has a real affection for the Metal Men. They're his children, basically. They're his friends. And they basically sacrifice themselves to, it's Chemo or Chemo. I've never known how you pronounce
Chemo,
it.
Yeah.
Chemo, yeah. And
well, I assume it's Chemo.
They sort of sacrifice themselves to stop, you know, this monster. And that destroys their bodies, but then they're sort of these little pokeballs that, you know, go into the metal, and that's what makes them sort of, that's their brain. That's their sentience is in this little ball. And that's an elegant sort of explanation for what the Metal Men are. I kind of like that. And I like the end where he said, basically Cyborg is saying, you can't protect them. You can't hide them away. They want to be heroes. They want to help. So let them help. Let them be superheroes. And you have to kind of stop protecting them. And at the end, he's like, yeah, that's what they'd want. So I gotta let the Metal Men be the Metal Men, as innocent as they are. And yeah. I really like that. The art is gorgeous in places.
Yes.
It's Ivan Reis. It's a little inconsistent, but I don't know that it's the best choice for the tone of what Geoff Johns is doing. I almost think that there should be more of a throwback kind of style where this is very modern. And the way that Geoff Johns writes these days is not modern. And I think that there's a dissonance there. There's a disconnect. And I don't know who I'd want to draw this, but It feels more like it should be like a Silver Age-y looking book, and you should play to that visually.
I don't know about that, but okay. I just think that the character models were inconsistent in this issue. The, you know, the main character Magnus, Dr. Magnus, would change from really young to sort of, you know, adults from panel to panel. But I thought the art was great. But my bigger thing thinking about this book was that if an event falls in the woods and no one cares or talks about it, it affects nothing. There's no discussion about it anywhere ever. Is it actually happening?
You know, it's not. It doesn't play a huge role in this story. So
it doesn't play a huge role in any story. It, you know, ever since they've been chasing that Civil War dragon, the Civil War Final Crisis dragon.
Yeah.
Every subsequent event has become less and less interesting, important.
You could sub in the name of any event. Where he's,
it doesn't mean anything. No one cares. Forever Evil's been going on for how long? I keep forgetting the name of it. You know, an issue comes out and I go, okay, I guess I'll read it, but I don't really care. It's interesting that we've reached that part of the event cycle where we hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
Again.
My takeaway from this is that, yeah, I wish that they would go away from that stuff and do the stories that Geoff Johns used to tell. And there's a glimmer of that here, and I like his take.
I don't even mean just DC. It's also a problem at Marvel too. I mean, I don't remember the name of the last Marvel event, but It's just interesting. I mean, I keep seeing Italian book of these come out, and I go, "All right, this is still happening."
Mm-hmm.
But it used to be the big thing. It used to, you know, consume everything and everybody's conversation. You remember on the whole website with Secret Invasion, every issue of Secret Invasion was the most talked about issue on the website.
Yeah.
You know, I can't imagine that would be the case with Forever Evil or whatever the last Marvel one was.
It's like trying to create a viral video. We'll make a viral video.
It's diminishing returns, and they've hit that point again where no, I don't think anyone really cares. But that's my opinion. I could be wrong.
Infinity. Infinity was the name of the last Marvel.
Right, exactly. I couldn't even
tell you.
Is it over? Is it still happening?
Well, we're in Inhumanity, but everything is connected, so yeah. Well, anyways.
Those are the books we want to talk about this week. I thought this was a good, strong week. I enjoyed it.
I had a lot of fun this week.
I had a lot of fun reading comics this week.
I enjoyed myself. I had a lot of great things to pick from.
And now let's squeak in Under the Wire on the February book of the month.
Still February.
I'm not saying you missed it. I'm just saying it's Under the Wire. You're indie sliding through the, you know, slide under the door, grabbing your hat.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think we could have talked
about it last week, but we're the Valentine's stuff, so.
Yeah, I was on the ball.
What's the book?
The book of the month is Ryan Brown's Shockingly Questionable God Hates Astronauts, Volume 1, The Head That Wouldn't Die. This is put out by Image Comics now, but previously he had done it. He'd done a self-published run of issues, and he had done as a webcomic, and then he did a very successful Kickstarter, and it made into a hardcover.
I've heard about this thing forever.
Well, here's the deal. Okay, here's my little backstory with it. In our line of work, in our area, you were going to get pitched a lot of things. An unconscionably high amount of things.
Right.
Many of them now come to you in the form of Kickstarter. And when I hear, hey, I've got a book that I want to do and it's on Kickstarter, I don't pay attention.
Right, because we get 25 a day.
Yeah, and he's not kidding. This one was actually recommended by some pros. You'll see that some pros actually had a big deal in getting this out. Chris Burnham was a big supporter of this book. He wrote the foreword for the book, and he sort of, when he saw it, he really loved it, and he tried to get it in front of people as much as possible. And all that stuff led to a very successful Kickstarter. For me, this was actually recommended to me by Charles Soule last year. Like, he was like, this book is amazing. You need to read it. And this was while the Kickstarter was still going on, I think. Actually, he'd just gotten his book from it. And I kept it in the back of my mind. I was like, all right, I have to read this. But I'd missed the Kickstarter, and so I couldn't get it anywhere else. But then Image came out with it, and I got the chance to read it. And it's very funny. And the thing that you'll notice is that I'm stalling on how to explain what it is. Because I cannot explain to you what this is.
You're tapped as like a motherfucker.
Yeah, I am. Basically, it's...
And I'm not going to help you, even though I did the Kickstarter and I have the book sitting in front of me. I'm not going to explain it to you.
It's a very silly book, ostensibly about superheroes, but it does not take it very seriously. It's sort of a superhero parody with very wacky stuff. It feels a lot like... it's almost like an Adult Swim show. It's like Aqua Teen Hunger Force with a superhero team. The basically, like, in the first issue, the superhero team, the power persons five is the name of the team, and they break in on John L. Sullivan, who's a boxer from, you may remember him from Unforgivable Blackness, the Jack Johnson documentary, and he has a team of criminal bears. And they get into a fight, and basically John L. Sullivan punches the hero's head so many times that he destroys it. But the hero is invincible, so he's left with this giant, swollen, floppy head, inside which his skull has been liquefied. And then he has marriage problems because his wife is no longer attracted to his big, floppy head. And it goes from there.
Where are the astronauts?
That is the thing that makes the most sense. There's a brief story where the whoever funds the super team has asked that they put a stop to people firing themselves into space, and because it's become a real problem with people launching themselves into orbit, which really doesn't have much to do with anything, but that's why. I want to say one thing.
Go ahead,
because it's the thing that sold me on the whole thing, and every time the concept of this thing returned, I would laugh, and that was Admiral Tiger eating a cheeseburger. Admiral Tiger eating a cheeseburger is a tiger with a human body who flies, who is in charge of a spaceship, and he is eating a cheeseburger.
And well, they're delicious.
I think.
And later, when King Tiger eating a cheeseburger is approached about his son, they bring him a half-eaten cheeseburger, and that's the big oh no moment. And it was wonderful.
I think the best use of our time here would be just to describe sequences like that. So I'm looking at a page where a buffalo is putting a powdered wig on his head. Okay.
I'm literally looking at
all right. That. And there's a mummy. He says, "All rise, the Honorable Buffalo William presiding." Because he is a judge. He's a buffalo with.
Is it a bunch of vignettes?
No, there's actually
a story.
There's three issues. It's an ongoing story. There's lots of little stuff that goes on inside. I think everybody's going to pick up on their own thing when they read this. When Charles explained it to me, he focused on the fact that one of the main characters is Gnarled Winslow, who is actor Reginald Vell Johnson with gorilla arms, who is playing basically Carl Winslow, but also his character from Die Hard. He's sort of a melange of the two because they're sort of similar. Right. This book is packed to the gills with what I think are actual subtle pop culture references, mm-hmm. as opposed to really tired ones. And again, that's a thing that can be really annoying because it's overdone constantly. All you see are pop culture references on Facebook or whatever all day, all the time. But it's actually funny. I didn't find it annoying at all. Then there's the three chapters, and then there's little two and three page stories drawn by guest artists of
Nick
the origin.
Nick Patara?
Yeah, great. Yeah, Nick Patara, C.P. Wilson III.
Chris Mitten.
Yep. There's a bunch of stuff. And then there's a bunch of other what's the word I'm looking for? Pinups in the back. And then there's the original sort of 24-hour comic that was done that sort of served as the inspiration for this. And then another 24-hour comic that was done sort of in the middle of doing this. And then Ryan Brown writes the sort of story of the whole thing and how it came about. You actually may, if you've been reading the Manhattan Projects, he's done some of the fill-ins on that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's nuts. It's really hard to explain. It is worth your time. If anything that we're saying sounded good to you, then I think you're not going to be disappointed at all. It's a Tom Scioli story here.
This is a weird thing. I love that the pinups have titles. There's a table of contents for them. And there's A Father's Grief, which is Tom Fowler drawing the King Tiger with the hamburger in front of him. And it's gorgeous. It's really stunning.
Yeah,
and
there's
like Al-Qaeda headquarters. Owl. O-W-L. Yeah.
Yeah. There's Al Capone.
Gnarled versus bears.
It's the anti-mugger, I think, is my favorite. The only thing he's interested in is stopping mugging.
It's
all he's interested in. And once the team stops being about mugging, he's out of there. And he also grows a third arm out of his chest.
Well,
it's nuts. It really, there's a lot of things going on. The lawyer is a cat with a jetpack. It's just a cat with a jetpack. And listen, now Connor, you know me well enough over the years that I really don't like stuff that is just completely strange for the sake of being strange.
Right.
It has to have something else to make it, you know, it's not just, hey, that's weird, this is good. It has whatever that other ingredient.
Cats and jetpacks.
Yeah, it's and Paul, you know things, dream sequences, strange things.
Oh, yeah,
weird.
Yeah.
It's not that.
No.
There's a story, there's a thing. And it totally works. And I was reading this like out while I was eating lunch and as laughing in public. Which to me is a sign of a great, great book. That's what I want out of a book that's supposed to be funny. I want it to make me laugh out loud.
I would consider it concrete surrealism.
Yeah, 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 okay. Surrealism on a track.
Yeah.
So God Hates Astronauts from Image Comics by
Ryan Brown.
Ryan Brown.
And many, many artists.
Check it out.
Let's take a look at an audience question. Randy from Parts Unknown says, here is a question that I'm sure you're getting all the time now that the trailer came out. What do I need to read before the Guardians of the Galaxy movie? So we want to talk about the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, but we also want to talk about some of the things you should read. I was excited to learn this morning that Dan Abnett is coming back and doing some Guardians of the Galaxy stuff for Marvel in the lead up. He's actually writing a prelude comic to the movie, which they've done with Captain America with the sequel, they're doing these little like sort of two part things that lead up to that. So there's that directly leads into the movie. I would recommend that you read the first issue, or maybe it's issue zero, of Guardians of the Galaxy by Bendis, because that seems to be the direction they're going with Star-Lord, at least with Peter Quill. The Peter Quill story,
probably the most relevant in terms of characterization, but not necessarily important, right?
No, it's not important. But I'm saying, like, if you want to get a feel for what that character is, aside from the trailer and all the crazy marketing you're going to see in the coming months, that is a comic that very much matches up to, at least in tone, what they're doing with Peter Quill. It may not be as jokey, but I think they're doing this thing where he was, you know, born on Earth and he has a history, like a lineage from space, and so I think that's where they're going with the movie.
But you guys are big fans of the Abnett Lanning, yes, Guardians of the Galaxy book, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that was fairly silly. It was fairly self-referential. I thought Peter Quill was definitely a version of him there.
Mm-hmm.
He was a little more heroic.
I believe they're putting out an omnibus or something like that of that run.
I mean, if they do that, that would be worth it.
They're doing paperback, like, deluxe trades.
Maybe that's it.
I think it's the like, there's very slim trades that were out now, which I think are out of print. They're putting those two trades together into one trade. I think there's four altogether, so there'll be two deluxe.
It was paperbacks. Something like 30 issues, thereabouts.
Yeah, and it's tricky because there's crossovers with Abnett was also doing Nova at the time, and there's like War of Kings.
Guardians of the Galaxy, the complete collection by Abnett Lanning. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
But
it comes out in August, so basically.
But it's not everything in one volume. I think there's going to be two volumes of that. But what they are doing is an omnibus of Annihilation, which introduces Drax and Gamora. And it's a bunch of miniseries that all tie into the story with Annihilus, who you might know from the Fantastic Four and from Infinity. He was featured pretty heavily in Infinity as well. So that's a lead into the Guardians of the Galaxy run.
That story led into Guardians of the Galaxy, or led into Nova, or led into both?
It led into both. Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy launched around the same time, and Annihilation was the first thing. And then there's Annihilation Conquest is the sequel to that. So it's big cosmic superhero stuff, lots of characters, big space opera. Quasar, Gladiator, all those characters. But if you just want to focus on the Guardians of the Galaxy as a team, it'll be that complete collection by Abnett and Lanning. Multiple artists worked on it. But it's all good.
I'm not going to read anything just because it's all coming out very close to the movie.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have time to read it.
It's not a bad idea to save it for afterwards, because then you're like, I saw the movie, I want more of that. So then you can check out their further adventures in the comics.
And they're going to do their job of making it accessible to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've done a good job of that so far. So let's talk really quickly our reaction to the trailer, which came out this week. Finally, we get to see the footage. Well, we saw the Thor bit at the end of Thor: The Dark World, but we finally get to see footage from the film, which comes out in August, which everyone was sort of getting nervous about because we hadn't seen anything from it. But it came out this week. People seem to generally have a good reaction to it. What did you guys think?
I adored this. This is my wheelhouse. I love space opera, and it's kind of crazy wacky. And I hope that it sates people who are going nuts for, you know, reunions of Firefly and things like that. Maybe that'll quiet down.
They're using all the Firefly actors?
Or else maybe they'll be like, well, if they can do that with that, you can bring Firefly back. But no, but and I loved Firefly at the time. I think it's just time to move on to other things like this. I thought this was a lot of fun. It's the most excited I've ever been about a Bradley Cooper project. I don't like Bradley Cooper.
Josh?
I liked it. I thought it was really interesting that it was so jokey. I don't think I expected that so much. Although in retrospect, it seems like it makes sense. At this point, I'll sort of reserve. I'm like, all right, that looks kind of cool. I'll go see it. I'm really not surprised. I find the reaction to it very interesting. I don't know if people are just jonesing for a new Marvel movie or what.
I think it's part of it.
People are going nuts about this thing. And for some reason, that makes me want to be like, well, let's just see how the movie is. Let's see how it goes. Because we live in a little bit of a bubble in that terms of sort of seeing how people react to stuff and what they like. Because they're comic book people. I'm curious how the world at large will react to it, because there's that little Marvel logo that they stuck over the logo, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, they're doing that now for all their films.
Yeah, but you really need to on that, because this is this is going to be their first movie that really has zero, you know,
no recognizable actors or,
that are recognizable
stars. Yeah.
As in the thing right now. People may not know it, but Chris Pratt is apparently the biggest star in the world. It's just because he did the voice of the Lego guy.
It's also interesting.
Well,
Zoe Saldana is
probably the most recognizable actor.
Well, Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper, but you don't see them. It's just their voices. So that's really interesting. So I'll be curious as to how they bring that into the marketing.
And listen, I like Glenn Close, but I don't think she's putting butts in seats.
Right. And she doesn't even look like Glenn Close. It's almost as if she's just voicing it, because, I mean, we've seen a little bit of the prosthetics and stuff, and it's kind of out there. I thought this was a really smart trailer because it does introduce the characters. It's very exposition-y, but in a fun way. I think they get away with it.
I think that's a good way to go, rather than here's what happens in the movie.
It's definitely fun. I enjoyed it, but I can't help but keep remembering how awful the scene was at the end of Thor. And how much it looked like a Star Trek picture.
It was pretty weak, but what I'm seeing here the photography looks really nice.
It looks like
a lived in world.
Reserved on it until I actually see it, because I can't forget what I saw already on the big screen.
Tempering my excitement for your guys' sake, because I want to be socially acceptable. But I think it looks really impressive.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being excited. I mean, be excited if you liked it. I thought it was a fun trailer for sure. But I just, the only thing I've seen on a big screen of Guardians of the Galaxy was pretty bad. So that's what's tempering my enjoyment of it. But I'm looking forward to it because I like the actors involved. And I like the.
I also like the. I'm really excited for Winter Soldier. But the tone is entirely different, and I like that there's two tonally is huge, and that's really exciting that they're not doing the same movie over and over again. Superman does not look that different from the Nolan Batman movies,
right?
Tonally and visually, so this is a complete departure, and that's really cool.
I wonder how they're going to tie it in, or if they are, marketing-wise, to the larger Marvel universe. Because I did see some chatter online asking if this was in the same universe as the Marvel movie, Avengers, because it's so far removed. But
did you see the poster where they're all posing around the what's it called, the blue thing, the shiny?
the gem?
Yeah, but they have a name for it. Which it's not important.
Not Infinity Gem.
What do they call it in the Avengers?
Oh, the Tesseract. No,
the Tesseract. Yeah, that's Tesseract. It's Tesseract stuff. They have them like posing around that, like they've captured it.
Right.
In the poster, and I like that marketing, the you're welcome thing. I like the attitude behind the marketing.
Yeah, no, I do like that too.
That next trailer needs to, if Robert Downey isn't in it. If he's in it in any way, it needs to be like Robert Downey Jr. is in this as Iron Man, and then everyone will go.
Do you think he's in it?
It would be dumb not to put him in it.
What, like as a coda at the end, or like a
something as a cameo, or as a thing? Like if the story is supposed to all be connected, it's supposed to be the same thing. I feel like, I mean, that's the thing, they're building comic book universe that's all intermingled as a movie.
Well, what's next after this is Avengers 2 in line, and then it's Ant-Man.
Yes,
although. They've been talking about now. We won't go to
rumors. They've already started shooting Avengers. They haven't started shooting Ant-Man yet.
Yeah. So Avengers is next after this. So what do you do for the lead-in? Because we've already done the Thor and Captain America sequels at this point. So, and also, is there going to be any kind of lead-in between Captain America 2 and Guardians of the Galaxy? How is that going to? You can see how they did it with Thor and
how does
Guardians,
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fit?
How does that all fit together? Because those are so tonally disparate, but. Anyways.
Well, we'll find out. I thought it was fun. I love Chris Pratt. I think he's great. I think he's one of the best things on Parks
and Rec. Whole lot of charisma. And, like everyone's like, it's so jokey and everything. But then you see all the montage stuff afterwards. It looks like a crazy action-packed movie. And it's going to have some drama in there too. So at least from the montage. So I liked it. Delivered on a lot.
I'm just looking at the cover of God Hate Astronauts again. Nuts.
So
Paul, you need to do another Talksplode, more Akira talk.
Yeah, this it's part of our Booksplode brand.
I'm sorry.
Jesus.
It's all on the same feed. I'm going to be talking to Scotty next week about Akira Volumes 3 and 4, by Katsuhiro Otomo. It's going to be on Booksplode. And then next month, we'll finish it out, Volumes 5 and 6. We haven't recorded that yet, but I'm sure it'll be out next week. We're excited about it. So grab those phone books, get ready. I'll probably be up on Thursday. Other things to plug, Fuzzy Typewriter. Of course, we're talking about True Detective, coming down to the final three, enjoying the hell out of that. Timmy Wood, who you may know from ifanboy.com, was on as a guest, and Connor was a guest previously. So
yes.
There you go. And then I just wanted to mention Bookrageous. I'm also a regular co-host on the Bookrageous podcast, which is about all kinds of books. We do talk about comics as well. We talked about Ms. Marvel this week a little bit. Start off the show talking about what we've been reading that week, and then we move into a topic, and this one was the weirdness of fan fiction based on J.K. Rowling's comments on Harry Potter and how the relationship should have gone. So we talk about licensed things and fan fiction, and it was silly and fun, and I think you'll get a kick out of it. So check out Bookrageous. And Josh Christie from iFanboy is on there as well.
Well, ifanboy.com is where you can find all these shows as well as the comments underneath them. You can talk about this week's books. You can talk about the Book of the Month. You can talk about Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. Do all that stuff at ifanboy.com. Also follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy. That's where you can find out what the pick of the week is going to be before the show comes out. And you can also follow us individually at C.S. Kilpatrick, J.A. Flanagan, and Fuzzy Typewriter on Twitter.
You could email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you could leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, with any questions, comments, concerns, etc., etc. That's pretty straightforward. If you've been listening before, you know how that works. If not, let's see what happens.
And you also probably know that if you dig us, write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about it. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Spread that iFanboy around.
All around.
Every time.
Like natural peanut butter. Two ingredients, baby. Peanut and salt. You got to mix it because there's oil at the top. But
ew.
You got to put jelly in it. That way they feel like they're sugar again until you get used to it.
All right. Till next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Josh, baby.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.